everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? And it is. I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story. What? From real history.
It's
fine. To my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously.
I take the intro seriously, though.
Apparently you do. It's a one part that you do. The look you gave me when I added three extra words. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again.
It's fine. I don't remember the intro. I just remember when it doesn't sound right. You know? It's like yeah. Like when you hear a song and like one note is off. I'm like, you don't know music from anything, but you know, like,
yeah,
somebody just fucked up the solo. So
yeah, now the whole rest of the performance is going to be, you're going to be thinking about it.
Yeah,
your like, head's going to be out of it. You're going to do terrible. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what did he do? Did he break one of the strings?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how it works.
I was just thinking, you know, is this a ghost? I always say it, you know, like that, like, is this a ghost? And really, it's a question.
Right.
And I never say it like a question.
Right.
So am I doing our listeners a disservice? What if this is the first time you're listening to this podcast and you want to know, you do want to know, is it a ghost? And I just want to say, like, if that's what you're wondering, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show where we tell ghost stories that are real.
Exactly. And then of course, my job is to say, no, that's not a ghost. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
But I think if you say it like you say, if you say it as a question, it sounds kind of like you're like in an antique mall, like pointing at things, you know,
yeah.
Is this a ghost? Yeah. What about that?
Which is exactly the conversation I have when I go into any antique mall.
There's if there was a place on earth with ghosts,
huh?
Missouri antique malls would absolutely be it.
Oh man.
God,
once you get in that sweet spot down near Branson, those Hill People antique stores. Holy cow.
We went to a Southern Illinois antique store last summer, I guess. Me and Amy took the girls in there and they were just blown away. They were like, you can buy all of this crap? I was like, yeah, any of this crap that you want. Some of it.
Come on with as many ghosts as you want.
Most of it tasteless. A lot of it covered in cigarette smoke. Any of it you want. And guess how much of it we're buying? Zero of it. We are just getting it out of the rain right now.
And it is shockingly expensive. We have this. So part of what I'm doing this summer in my office, in my work is I'm setting up this whole room to be part of this whole thing. It's not a big deal, but it's this room that I've commandeered in this building. And the important part of this story is next to the room is this hallway that no one knows exists. It's basically a secret hallway.
Mm.
Like you could open a speakeasy on this floor of my school and it would be awesome.
Okay.
Now the hallway connects to the administrative building on the bottom floor, right, where the admissions and financial aid and the president and provost and all that is.
Right, right.
So it's a useful hallway. Mm-hmm. So students will want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the hallway the other day. And it's great because it's like this weird, like checkered floor, like really cheap linoleum that was like laid down in the 70s. And then the walls are like the dark wood panel.
Oh, okay. Walls. I like that.
And it's just like this little hallway with a little bit of light and it looks great. And I'm so excited. And so my plan is I want to like theme that out, like make it look like a nice hallway. And every time, just so like when you're walking, because right now it's like storage. You want to get all that stuff out of there.
Okay.
What?
So you're decorating a hallway.
Yeah.
At your workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. No, I just want to clarify.
What do you do at your work?
Not that. I'll be short. Not that.
If I gave you the long version of the story, it would make sense a little bit why I'm doing this, but I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So I'm decorating this hallway. So we're going to clean all the storage stuff out of it. And then what I want to do is like theme it. My theme idea is like Wayne's World basement.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Okay. A lot of that stuff you can get from antique stores.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Like the crummiest stuff there is like that late 70s, early 80s, like weird lamps and things.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to put in there. Now, no one else sees this vision. And everyone I talk to about it is like, this hallway is terrible. Like, you're going to paint the walls, right? And I'm like, why would I paint these walls? They're gorgeous. And no one else understands, but I see it up here.
I do like that you've tricked other people at this school to be convinced that you own this hallway somehow. Like that, hallways classically not owned by any one person.
This is the whole thing. I am going to tell you the whole story. So we need we need this like basically like a clubhouse room, like a hangout room for a group of students that I'll be overseeing, right? Like a living community.
You need basically. A hangout room. Okay.
Yeah. At least I've convinced him that I do. And so I found this empty classroom in the bottom floor of my building.
Mm-hmm.
In the bottom floor, we're on a mountain, so the bottom floor is like half basement. Half feels like a basement, right?
Like a walkout, yeah.
So it feels like no one goes down there because everyone's like, it's a basement.
Mm-hmm.
But I found this big room. And then next to them was this office, this huge office that three people shared. And I somehow tricked them into moving into a much smaller office upstairs. And I moved my small office down into that huge office. And so now I have this big office, and then the next office to me is an even bigger office, and that's one of my colleagues who's in phased retirement, and she's leaving in 2 years. And when she's gone, I get that office.
Okay, yeah.
I have literally half of the floor. I've commandeered. I've just done a land grab. It feels like Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And I've got this whole floor, and then I've got this back hallway that connects to the administrative building. Mm-hmm. That's mine. And I've moved all my stuff there. I'm in there, and I've started telling the provost, and he's like, oh, interesting. And I told the president, and he's like, that's a great idea. Good thinking. And I'm like, this is great. And so in the so I have this back half, and there's a fire door that separates the front half from the back half.
Right.
That always is closed. Mm-hmm. So no one ever goes back there. So no one even knows it exists. It's my own huge space that I now own. And this I haven't even been there a year yet. Just think of what I'm gonna be in control of 6 months from now. God,
it's amazing. It's going to be great.
So I'm very excited. Thank you for asking.
Well, good luck. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
I hope it doesn't backfire.
I don't see how it could. I will say I have discouraged people, my colleagues, from coming down to visit my new office because I don't want them to see how big it is. Because it's unreasonably large. How about you? How's your job going?
My job? Oh, I don't want to talk about that.
okay.
Things are fine. We had Easter. It was good. We did Easter. I have a question for you. I was thinking about this today.
Okay.
If your spouse your current spouse, any of your spouses, really. If your spouse tells you, don't make me laugh, I have to pee, what is your immediate response to this?
Funniest thing I could think
absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I was not getting the same response from my spouse today, but like, she was surprised that I was trying to make her laugh as much as I was and doing a really good job of it. But I don't know what the expectation is there.
I was gonna say, Amy has met you. Obviously, right. She knows you fairly well.
She met me years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what? Why would she give you that power over her?
I don't know.
What was she thinking?
I think she had going to the bathroom on the brain. And just couldn't think straight. It's all I can do. But yeah, I mean, I mean, she may as well just challenge me to like a half court shot contest or something. Like
I will step up to that plate. Yeah. Thank you very much. I have some news that I learned recently that I think I wasn't going to bring up, but now that you mentioned this, I think I might be able to explain it for you. I read this study the other day. Maybe I heard about it first on Wait, Don't Tell Me. I think apparently there's a new study out that running a marathon does severe brain damage that takes like 3 months to heal. Okay. And I was hoping to find a way to work that into this conversation without being offensive to you or to Amy. But here I am.
Okay.
And with that story,
that might be worth a Google, actually. That might be worth a Goog. I might we might just Google that one a little bit later. I
think it might be worthwhile. Yeah. Oh, it would explain it.
What'd you do this weekend?
I went outside.
As you said. Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
That's good. What was Easter? So we did some like Easter egg hunt stuff. Local brewery that did some Easter egg. Actually did the most disappointing Easter egg hunts in the world. Because they gave it a real good try. But they hit about 40 eggs and there were like 30 kids.
They hit them all like, 6 or 7 feet off the ground as well. And
it's all, And most of the kids are, quite a bit older than Maple and Ivy. And so like they each found like one and they were really sad. And I tried to explain to them that that's actually pretty good for the numbers. The odds were not in their favor to find any. And they didn't appreciate that. They didn't like it. So it was tough. So that was on Sunday. And then Saturday, we went to a garden party with some friends. They had us over for their they got a backyard. It's a backyard party.
Oh, is that not? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess that doesn't have quite the ring of a garden party.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. In some circles, it's frowned upon.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm gonna change my view here. I'm doing it. I should just copy this into notes. Hold on a second.
If you need to finish up a couple things, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on.
I know you're real busy during the week.
Hey, listen, I haven't really busy during the week. It's last week was finals week. Actually, today, as we record, is finals week also. This is the last night of finals week, which is the busiest fall weeks, which means all the students are turning in their finally all a semester's worth of assignments right now. Mm-hmm.
And you are on a podcast.
Well, I'm mostly what I'm doing now with my time is spending a lot of my time
right.
writing them emails saying it's too late to turn this in, please go away. Which takes time.
I had to wear a mask over the weekend visiting my dad. And it was after I'd just eaten Easter dinner, and it was like a ton of lasagna and really garlicky salad and stuff like that. And I had this big mask on, and I let out this horrendous burp, and I forgot. It's been years.
You gassed yourself?
It's been years, right? Like during COVID, everyone learns the first time, like, oh yeah, you don't burp in the mask.
Yeah.
And it's been long enough, my brain has reset, and I burped in the mask again, and fuck, dude.
But you know what? You have to burp in the mask, because if you don't burp in the mask, then your burp, like if you move the mask to burp,
right,
that triple negates the effect of the mask.
Correct. Yeah.
Now everything is really out there.
Yeah, I'm expelling like saliva particles and a little bit of food particles and some juices. So
you can, you're sending around not only COVID, but also maybe E. coli.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, whatever blood disease you might have.
All kinds of stuff. I don't want to know.
I haven't been a doctor in 30 years. Not going to go back now. He might tell me bad news. Anything else?
No, that's good. No, that's. Okay. I think I'm good.
Ready to hear a ghost story?
Please.
Dong. Oh, and I should say, these notes were not taken by me.
Oh, okay.
I did not take these notes. And these notes were taken by my favorite of all our listeners.
Oh.
Aaron Smith.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were, try to make a joke about that. She listens to the podcast and she knows where you live. Yep. She didn't write that one down, so I didn't know how to pronounce the words. Like Ron Burgundy over here. A few weeks ago I had a crunch of a week, and I had asked Aaron, or she had offered, I don't know, at some point it came up that she could write notes, and I was like, yeah, that'd be a really big help. But then I ended up having time to do it, and I was like, don't worry about writing the notes. Thank you for offering me. I'll do it. But I guess she was like actually really excited about taking notes. And so the other night she was like, hey, I took notes for you for the podcast.
Wow.
And I skimmed through them. Seems great. And it's a story that I've been wanting to do for a long time, but I have not done. So I'm very excited. And thank you to Aaron very much. Let's see. I already did the dong, so let's just do it. Guido Pfister.
I hardly knew her. Okay.
Any questions so far?
No, I would assume she was inspired by last week's episode.
I'd like to fist him. Guido Pfister was born on September 13th, 1818, in Hechingen, Germany. Pretty sure that's how that's pronounced.
It is, yeah.
Guido emigrated on a ship called the Emerald to New York City on September 23rd, 1845, at the age of 27. A few years later, he marries a Swiss immigrant named Elizabeth Gasser. Pfister and Gasser.
Pfister and Gasser. Goodness gracious.
Man.
Now, like, if that's the name of the bar, I'm still going, but I'm keeping my head on a swivel, you know.
And I want to know how they're spelled. Yeah. That's going to be important. They eventually moved to Buffalo, New York, where Guido found work as a farmer. No, sorry, tanner.
Oh.
I got to get my eyes checked. Guido found work as a tanner.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about tanning.
We have talked about tanning.
Just for folks who are just tuning in recently and don't know history, you want to tell them what tanning is?
Sure. That is the curing of animal hides into useful cloth or useful material, leather.
And historically speaking, would you say it was a humane and clean occupation?
Depends on which end of it you're on. I would say
cow.
Yeah, cow. No, cow hates this. It's okay. The least favorite part of it. Although I'm pretty sure the cow doesn't have any idea what's going on at that point. I think the cow is pretty much in a lot of pieces by that point. So
pretty much or is, because that's
important. I'm gonna say is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And they, to get into a lot of pieces, they probably humanely died.
Yes. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big thing.
I'm sure. Yeah. Lethal Injection, family was there, the whole thing.
They said their last goodbyes. Yeah. Everyone whispered one nice thing about the cow that they remember from their childhood.
And then they locked the cow in a small minivan in a garage and let the engine run and check back in on him in the morning.
I think there's a Far Side about this.
After all that happens, then you remove the hide from mm-hmm. the animal, and then you go through the tanning process. The tanning process is unbelievably gross as well.
All right, so as his skills as a tanner grow, he starts dreaming of opening his own leather store. Mm. Of course.
Sure.
News of new business opportunities in the emerging towns of Chicago and Milwaukee mm-hmm. inspired Guido to move with his wife out to Milwaukee, Wisconsin in May 1847, where he opened a leather store called Buffalo Leather Co.
Ooh, okay.
Kind of rolls off the tongue, and I like it.
It really does.
Buffalo Leather Co. Buffalo Leather Co. Do they have buffalo in Wisconsin?
Probably.
It's a little far north, but they probably had some.
I mean, I don't think the buffalo mind one way or another. Yeah, I mean, I think they were everywhere until...
Do you think he called it buffalo because he went to Buffalo? Yeah, until we did our thing.
Right,
sure. Could just be buffalo, like an homage to Buffalo, New York.
Mm, but if you're leather goods, I think it's like buffalo wings. Like, was it the city or is it the animal
or is it actual animal wings? And we'll never know. He had a network there with other German-born immigrant tanners, and it grew quickly.
It's a crew you do not want to cross.
Not oh Jesus Christ! Not years. At yeah. all. And he eventually went into business with another German tanner named Frederick Vogel. They built an extremely successful business called Pfister and Vogel Leather Company, which grew to be the largest tannery in the Cream City. Do you know Milwaukee was called the Cream City?
I don't like that I know that now.
Yeah, would you like to know why it's called the Cream City?
Please don't have it to do with the tanning business. I really don't want that to be it.
It does not have to do with the tanning business. I thought maybe the beer business.
That makes sense. There, the cream, right? On top of the beer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's wrong,
that's
too.
The cream, that's how beer works.
Yeah. That's how you make whipped cream. Beer comes from cows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's called Cream City because there are so many cream-colored bricks in Milwaukee.
Because of that's terrible. Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
It's bad. It would be better if it was related to tanning, wouldn't it? That'd be better in hindsight. So Pfister's successes lead him to invest in other ventures, primarily banking and, of course, railroads.
Mm-hmm. Got to get that leather other places and mm-hmm. fast.
Because we didn't tan it all the way, and it's starting to smell. By the late 1870s, he's one of Milwaukee's richest citizens. Guido Pfister dies on February 2nd, 1889, at his home at 429 Jefferson Street. In Milwaukee, he dies of a bowel complaint resulting from a cold.
I will never complain about a cold again. Ever. Ever.
Will you complain about your bowel?
I will complain about my bowel, but I will never, ever complain about the sniffles. Because the first response is going to be, oh, what if that cold traveled to your bowels and made them explode? And
I was like, oh, man. In his will, which was written in 1883, so 6 years before he died, he divided his estate of at least $2 million at that time. Ooh. Shit ton of money. He divided it among his wife and his two adopted children, Louisa and Charles.
Oh, okay.
Just prior to his death, Guido had been working with Charles on a plan to create a magnificent hotel in downtown Milwaukee.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Now you see where we're going here.
Now we're getting somewhere.
A hotel that would attract people from all over the United States. Should note here, we don't know why the Pfister family adopted Charles and Louisa, but it may have been motivated by the fact that Guido needed an heir and guarantor of his economic empire.
Oh, okay.
Because you know, like when you have a lot of money, like mm-hmm. you have a lot,
super
wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing you need is to make sure that when you die and don't care anymore, mm-hmm. that no one else gets it. That's primary importance.
Or at least that no girls get it. That's the important
thing. Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. I do like, yeah. I feel like they probably adopted Louisa first, and there was a typo, and it said Louis, and they got the girl, and like, ah, fuck. They
open up the box. What the fuck is this?
Can we return this one for a boy? No, fuck, buy the boy. So, yeah, so that's probably what happened. Now, they had adopted them when you know, quite a long time ago. So by the time Guido dies, Charles Frederick Pfister is 30 years old. He inherits his empire. Charles had begun his business career at the age of 18, starting at the bottom of the ladder at the Pfister and Vogel Leather Company.
The bottom of the Pfister.
You're not my real son, so you're actually going to have to start with the interns. Sorry. Sorry about that. Over the course of the next 13 years, he helped to grow the business as head of sales and eventually treasurer. But it wasn't until after Guido passed that Charles had any authority to act in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
So now daddy's gone.
Now it's my fist.
Now it's my... That's right. And one of his first priorities was to complete his father's original vision of creating a luxury hotel in the heart of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's gone. It's my fist. I can do what I want. I'm going to do what he wanted. Can't tell me not to. And so Charles builds Milwaukee's legendary Pfister Hotel.
Yes.
You've stayed at the Pfister.
I have stayed at the Pfister before. Yeah.
I have not stayed at the Pfister, but I've seen the Pfister.
Mm-hmm.
I never stayed in the Pfister. Never got all up in the Pfister.
Well.
Like you did.
I have.
Did you see any ghosts?
I didn't. I saw the St. Louis Cardinals, though.
They stayed at the Pfister.
Yeah,
it's a big baseball hotel.
Yeah, we were. It was on a whim. We just went up to Milwaukee because Cardinals were playing. We wanted something to do that weekend, or maybe it was actually that might have been our first anniversary weekend. Now that I think of it, that might have been it. It might have been our 1 year anniversary. We traveled there, and the Cardinals were in town, and we didn't realize they were staying at the Pfister Hotel. It was just they had a special. Stayed there one night, came downstairs to the lobby the next day, and the entire St. Louis Cardinals organization is in the lobby. Like, what the fuck have I done?
I know we already had sex this morning, but I'm going to do it again.
But just with me.
That's cool. We should tell the listeners, too. This is when you were living in Chicago. It's not like you, like Milwaukee was such an important romantic one-year anniversary trip.
Absolutely. Like,
let's go all the way to Milwaukee.
Exactly, yeah. But from Chicago, it's romantic enough for Chicago.
It's romantic enough from Chicago. Yeah. And like, if you're going to do like a one-night stay somewhere, two nights, you don't want, there's no other place. There's no other option.
South is no good from Chicago.
No. So. You can go to like Cleveland, I guess, if you want to go.
Oh, boy.
Northeast. So the Pfister, do you like it? You remember?
I did love it. Yeah, it was quite luxurious. It was that, that kind of old school luxury.
It's very blocky from the outside, right?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, had a good time.
In the age of Minecraft, block is luxury. That's what I always say.
We did go and see the Minecraft movie this week. We did.
How was it?
Took the kids. So
no, wait. First, do you play Minecraft? Have you played Minecraft? Do you know anything about Minecraft? Do you care about Minecraft?
I know a lot of. I played Minecraft whenever the first alpha came out of the game, like 12, no, longer
than that. Gotta be more than that.
14 years ago, I guess.
30 years ago?
Yeah. That was back whenever Scott and Jeff and Cody and all of us played together. We had our own
server. We're still talking to you?
Yeah. But yeah, I played Minecraft a long, long time ago, and then the girls all play it now. So yeah, we share that together. So we had a really good time. It's one of those movies that... It's not trying to do anything that it isn't, setting out to do from the get-go.
Yeah, so that's great. I like a movie I don't have to think about a thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I saw Death of a Unicorn the other week. It was perfect. No notes. all right, so the hotel opens in 1893 at a cost of over $1 million.
Ooh, half his bucks. Half his bucks.
Which is...
in the hotel.
You said all his bucks.
You said $2 million is what he had.
I think they split $2 million.
Oh, they split $2 million. Okay.
So it's all his bucks, I think.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
What else can you spend it on?
He didn't use his own money. People don't use their own money for
it's
anything.
It's all TIF financing and tax breaks. It's
leverage to the fucking gills. That's $35 million today, which I guess is a lot. I don't really know.
I don't think you could build the Pfister Hotel for $35 million today.
I don't think
so. You might be able to renovate it for that much. I don't think you could build it for that much.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a big. I'll share it. I know you know what it looks like, but I'll just for our YouTube listeners here, who are too lazy to do this on their own. There's our guy.
It's a big boy.
It's good.
It's a big boy.
Is this part of this something else? Right.
I think that's something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Pfister like ends here. I think actually, right. This isn't part of it. This was added on later. Okay. Yeah, it's nice. Mm-hmm. It's big. $35 million big, I guess. Anyway, so it's designed by Henry C. Koch in the Romanesque Revival style. It boasted cutting-edge features like electricity, thermostat controls in every guest room, which does feel like a big one. And also, what's this? Oh, fireproofing. They could feel the heat from the Chicago fire, and they're like, oh, boy, nope. We are fireproofing this thing.
I do like when you get that out of the way early. Like, it's not going to be a fire story, okay?
Just so everyone knows here. Yeah. I know a lot of our hotel stories are fire ghosts. Not this one, probably. I haven't read it. In addition to its then modern amenities, the hotel contained a formal dining room, a gentleman's lounge. And at this point, though, in history, I feel like every lounge is a gentleman's lounge.
Yeah, it's probably a nice way of putting it.
And they have two billiard rooms, one each for women and men.
Oh, hey.
So the ladies can also play pool. It's nice. Some of the most powerful people in the nation visit at one point or another, starting with President William McKinley in 1897. For Pfister, the opening represented the realization of a family dream. But as a business venture, new hotel sucked it hard. Faced severe troubles at the outset. The panic of 1893 was still depressing finance and manufacturing, and the fixed costs of the hotel resulted in high losses. Pfister loved to sit in the lobby and welcome guests, paid the bills, and developed new strategies for attracting more guests. So he's an entrepreneurial thinker.
Sure, yeah. I mean, he's still in Milwaukee, but...
Yeah, you know. So that's not going to do him any favors. That's not,
that's strikes one and two. But
when did the Brewers start playing? They can't even put up baseball teams here yet, can they? This is way too early.
No.
Also, do you think the Pfister is a good location for visiting baseball teams, given how far away the stadium is from downtown?
It's like the only nice thing in Milwaukee.
They put them up at the Days Inn down by exactly. off the highway.
We got you guys a series of Airbnbs in the neighborhoods around the stadium.
That's a tough stadium to get to. All right. First, so he's doing these things to attract more guests. First, he opens the hotel to his business partners and political friends, which seems like you just open it to everybody. Maybe is a better idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hotel, so it's one of its main features.
It looks like it has a lot of rooms. I don't know how many people he knows, but in 1894, he offered to host the Republican State Commission, which I guess is probably like the Republican State Convention. And gave a large club room and additional suites to party leaders on a complimentary basis. So this is why the hotel is
I was going to say this.
It's all coming clear.
So it's becoming the fire festival of hotels. Like, I'm only going to invite my friends to this hotel. And Blink-182 is going to come to the hotel.
We have really good meals for you. Here's your white bread and your cheese slice. Until the turn of the century, the Pfister Hotel was possibly the most important political meeting space in the state of Wisconsin, which I guess is fine if you don't care about making money off of it.
Right, sure, yeah.
Politicians are not known for giving money in the way that they're
correct.
For taking
money. They cash in checks, not writing checks.
Yeah. Second, Charles Pfister established the hotel as a place for celebrities of national and international standing. This could be better. This could be money. Let's see if this could works out for him. Marketing and personal contacts were crucial for this endeavor, and already in May 1893, Pfister invited press representatives from the U.S. and Europe to visit this this little hotel and gave a big banquet in their honor, which cost a whole lot of money. He developed his father and son story into a broadly recounted narrative. So he's doing some PR here. Doing the feature story about himself. That underscored the importance of his family history by placing a marble bust of Guido Pfister in the ladies' parlor.
Someone grab the thermostat and turn it real low. Because it's getting warm in here.
definitely what you want is a guy named Guido Pfister. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Guido is not traditionally a German name, right?
Guido Pfister sounds like one of the new Batman villains when they tried to make the whole series be real shady.
Let's see. Large parts of his own, Pfister's own private art collection were exhibited in the hotel too. And finally, then Pfister utilized his private contacts to invite well-known people to Milwaukee. In the end, he was pretty successful. Eventually, American presidents, McKinley, we already said, Taft, mm-hmm. Roosevelt, and Wilson all stayed at the hotel, along with Prince Heinrich of Prussia. Hmm. Businessmen such as Thomas Lipton found their way to Milwaukee, and so did entertainers of the day, such as Sarah Bernhardt. Ever heard of Sarah Bernhardt? She's a big one.
Was she in Roseanne?
No, sorry, that's a different. That's a different one. Different oh, Sarah okay. Bernhardt.
No, I don't.
This is the classic. So, Bernard, Enrico Caruso, Ernestine Schumann-Heich, and Jan, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name. So one of these is definitely a good celebrity. The other ones, never heard of them. And I've taken two film classes, so they're really reaching here. So these visitors, they get them headlines, and they attracted many less famous people to the place. Kind of like now that you've said the Cardinals are there, lots of our fans will go there, I'm sure. They want to see the Cardinals. I'm sure. Yeah. But all the elegance and luxury, though, could not hide the fact that African Americans had to pay higher rates than white guests. So that's what we call a bummer.
Yes. That's a big bummer right there.
Yeah. The Pfister became a playground for the white elite of the region and beyond, but not so much for any of the non-white, non-elite. Let's see. There's a fun fact here I'm going to skip over. I don't like it.
Immediately following the racism parts. Yeah, I can imagine that might not have been the funnest fact.
Yeah, and you want to hear it? I'll just give it to you. It's not. It has anything to do with that. It's less related. Where's my button here? Fun fact.
Wham!
Donald Trump stayed there during the 2024 RNC.
Not as fun.
Not as fun. Oh, well. For many years, Charles Pfister was a... didn't say lady visitor. That says a daily visitor to the hotel.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm having my daily visitor. I'll be right back.
And the hotel served as his official place of residence. So that makes sense why he's a daily visitor, I suppose. At the height of Prohibition, Charles opened a modest pub called the English Room, where he concocted a house specialty he named Indian Punch. This was all illegal, but no one cared because he was so rich. Indian Punch would eventually build a huge following, incentivizing Pfister to bottle it for nationwide consumption. Is this a thing? Let's see.
Indian Punch?
I'm going to do the worst thing I can think of to do right now and Google Indian Punch.
Indian Punch Pfister.
That's what I did. And great. I don't see anything here. I don't think so.
I wouldn't click on the did you mean for this one, by the way.
They might sell it still at the hotel bar, though.
Indian
Punch. Yeah, let's see. One says what he hoped to bottle and sell nationwide.
Is it just like Hawaiian Punch and rubbing alcohol? I mean, this doesn't sound...
I think it's probably about right. This is before regulation, so... where we go here? Right before his death, after he suffered a stroke in April of 1927, the Milwaukee millionaire decided to sell the hotel to a trustworthy former manager, Roy Smith. Roy had begun his career as a bellboy at the Hotel Pfister in 1896 and was promoted to manager in 1911. I guess Charles didn't have any kids and was very anti-adoption. I'm going to close the door on my way out. No one else. By 1962, the Pfister was purchased by Ben Marcus, who had extensive plans to restore the structure back to its former glory. The work on the building expanded considerably, primarily through the addition of a new 23-story guest room tower, which you've seen and which looks fucking nothing like the rest of the hotel. It's one of the worst additions I've ever seen on any building, hands down. So I guess it is part of it now. An ornate bar called the Crown Room was the central fixture of the tower, which rapidly rose to become Milwaukee's premier nightclub over the next few decades.
Ooh.
It's live entertainment was its most appealing feature, hosting renowned jazz musicians like Sarah Vaughan and Carmen McRae.
Okay.
All right. Still under the watchful eye of the Marcus family. Today, the Pfister Hotel remains a historic gem in downtown Milwaukee. Any questions?
No. No, I'm just excited to find out more about the Cream City, this jewel of the Cream City.
Yeah, there's probably more about that in here somewhere. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Beyond the Pfister's longstanding legacy of luxury, the hotel also has garnered attention for its hauntings. Guests have reported apparitions of Charles Pfister roaming the staircase, knocking, pounding, fisting. Electronics turning off and on.
What is that sound? Moving. What is that sound? It's not knocking. It's not banging. Is it? Is someone fixing some plumbing? Is there some?
It's gushy.
It's definitely gushy. It's gushy.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Is it? Is it?
Ugh. It's not fisting, right? It's not fisting. So funny Pfister wham. God, I gotta get you one of them buttons. In the 2020 COVID baseball season, I don't know if you remember, right, like the Cardinals been playing for like four games or something like that, and they had a COVID outbreak on the team, and the whole team got quarantined for like 10 days or whatever.
Yeah,
that's where they got quarantined, was in the Pfister Hotel. So really? There are a bunch of videos of them like flipping mattresses and stuff up against the wall so they could like practice pitching and stuff into the mattresses in their room, because they had to
put like nine mattresses together so they don't tear through them. Jesus. Due to the hotel's attraction to celebrities, as well as its proximity to the home stadium of the Brewers, the hotel seems to haunt traveling MLB teams more than any other hotel in the country. Mm-hmm. Which we did. We talked about basketball players being haunted.
Yes. Yeah, it was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoa. Yeah. Look at this memory. This is somebody who doesn't forget anything about these shows.
Okay, true or false? After your humiliation two episodes ago, you went back and re-listened to every episode and took notes.
So there was a part of me that when you started talking about the Pfister Hotel, I thought, haven't we done this one before? And then I thought, no, I'm not even going to say it. I'm either wrong or he's going to crash on air. I really don't care.
Actually, I will say, when Aaron sent this over, I was like, because I've been wanting to do the Pfister for so long. Mm. But I don't like doing hotels just because there's so many ghosts to talk about. I like a through line.
Sure.
But I've been thinking about doing the Pfister for so long. I was like, I think we've done this before. And she said, you've not. Yeah, good. This better be true, because Patrick is never going to let me hear the end of it if it's not. So unless you and Aaron are in cahoots here, I think this is new. So back to baseball. In 2001, Adrian Beltre, you know him?
I do. He hates having his head touched.
He sure did. <does. laughs> Are there videos of him like just losing his mind?
Oh, it's. I mean, once he let it out, once he told somebody he really doesn't like having his head touched, every single person in baseball just wants to touch the man's head.
Adrian said that he heard knocking at his door while he was staying at the Pfister, even with the TV and air conditioner turned off. That's the end of this story. Now, I'm going to assume that he then went to check the door and there was no one there. That feels logical.
Someone knocked on my door once. Probably a ghost.
I didn't check in case it was a person who wanted to touch my head. In 2008, Carlos Gomez was staying at the hotel, and it's a good thing that Gomez ultimately joined the Brewers and didn't have to stay overnight in a hotel. In 2008, as a member of the Twins, he was quoted as saying, quote, "Everything's scary. Everything in the hotel, the painting and pictures, it's a lot of old crazy stuff. No good, man. No good." Let's see. 2009, Mike Cameron, the Brewers outfielder, didn't actually have a story since he could live locally. He didn't have to stay at the hotel, of course. But he said he would never stay in the Pfister after hearing other players' stories. In 2009, Brendan Ryan, quote, "It was more like a moving light that kind of passed through the room."
Orb time.
And you gotta trust Brendan Ryan.
Absolutely.
I always love a little St. Louis boy. he told us at a local TV station. He said the room got a little bit chillier.
That was, I mean, we already said they have thermostats. So it's.
Fine. In 2009, Giants infielder Pablo Sandoval told ESPN in 2013. By the way, if any of these notes are wrong about teams, will you let me know so I don't get like messages about them?
Sure. Sure.
I didn't double check any of these information.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sandoval tells ESPN in 2013, sorry, about an experience that he had in 2009. Quote, I went to take a shower and I remember putting my iPad next to a speaker. When I came out, it was playing music and I have no idea why.
Oof. Spooky. Kung Fu Panda is spooked.
Sandoval and teammate Edgar Renteria refused to stay with the rest of the team at the Pfister in 2010. Renteria seems like he would be a guy who believes in ghosts.
I could see it. Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. 2011, Michael Young, also speaking in 2013, the former Rangers player talked about a time when in 2011 when he stayed at the hotel. Quote, a couple of years ago, I was lying in bed after a night game and I was out. My room was locked, but I heard these footsteps inside my room stomping around. Are you convinced?
Becoming more so, I think.
Okay, good. Would you believe a player named Bryce Harper if he told you a ghost story about the Pfister?
I know his name.
The National Star said one year after his experience, quote, I laid a pair of jeans and a shirt on that table at the foot of the bed. When I woke up in the morning, I swear on everything, the clothes were on the floor and the table was on the opposite side of the room.
Oof.
Could have been a stalker.
I mean, yeah.
He's got a lot of lady fans. Let's see. In a lengthy ESPN article detailing other athletes' experiences, Brandon Phillips said he was in his room when the radio turned on. Quote, so I turned it off and I got in the shower. When he came back out, the radio was on again. Someone's trying to serenade baseball players in the shower. Someone's trying to get sexy. That same article also details a creepy, undated experience by Angels pitcher C.J. Wilson, who made his start at Miller Park in 2013. Quote, I was on the computer one night doing my typical shtick, surfing the web, sending an email, editing a photo. And then all of a sudden the light started flickering. I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to be so pissed if my computer dies.
Before I'm done editing this photo of a bird.
Then the light just shuts off. And then the TV shuts off. And then the light turns back on. But the light at the front door turns off. I just yelled out, really? Oh, it continues. So after that, I went back to whatever I was doing on the computer. Doing this is what he's doing.
Yeah.
Please don't drop. Please don't drop so close. Then 30 minutes later, there's scratching in the walls.
Ooh.
Now I'm thinking, okay, it's Midwest. There could be a possum or something in the wall, right? That's possible, isn't it? All I knew is that there were definitely noises coming from inside the wall. Wilson also said that everyone on his team had a story. Quote, one dude got locked in his bathroom and he had to get the hotel to get him out. Another guy had the lights turn off when he was in the shower. Another guy saw something.
Oof. Were they all in the same room? Or is that?
Yeah, I think so. That's why I turned the lights off. Yeah. Oh, no.
I got locked in the bathroom. Someone in the shower. And then I saw something.
Another quote from Wilson. I don't get terribly concerned unless things start shattering in the room. So it was fine.
I have a threshold. There's a threshold.
I don't get that much sleep anyway. Yeah. But you just get a vibe when you walk in. It almost feels like you're in Prague or something. Very gothic, lots of gold enamel, crosswalks and atriums everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Being on the road so much, we're used to a standard cookie-cutter place, but this hotel totally stands alone. Gosh, there's more. You want to keep hearing some baseball stories?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Baseball ghost?
Hear about some guys. Love hearing about some guys.
Love those boys. Want to hear one about Shelby Miller?
Oh, yeah. Another former Cardinal.
Mm-hmm. 2023, former Brewers infielder Jace Peterson told a story of how he and his then Braves teammate. No, wait. What is this? This is wrong. There's no Shelby Miller story. Oh, here we go. Yeah. He and his then Braves teammate Johnny Gomez conspired to frighten Shelby Miller by stealing the All-Star pitcher's key and altering his room. That's not a ghost story. Erin did warn me that eventually she just copied and pasted from some websites to stop writing her own notes. So it's a good goof, though. It's a good goof. Let's see. Is this one a ghost story? Yeah. Another future Brewers player, Jiman Choi. Mm-hmm. Pronouncing that rightly? Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Sure. Choi was Angels first baseman at the time when he reported feeling the presence of a spirit in his bed with him at night. In 2016, Brewers manager Craig Counsell said he heard former Pirates infielder Pedro Alvarez had experienced weirdness at the hotel, which matches up with a story told in 2016 by Pirates manager Clint Hurdle. Hurdle didn't name names, but did say that one of his players became spooked when a TV in his room turned on twice in one night. Mm-mm-mm. Alvarez now works in the Brewers organization, presumably to try to appease the ghosts, so they will leave him alone.
I'm here to hunt ghosts.
Yeah. And scout, I will also help with baseball.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If you need me to, but I'm really here to hunt ghosts.
Mostly I'm going to hunt ghosts.
Yeah.
Rockies pitcher John Gray, who has a passion for ghost hunting, got the chance to tackle the Pfister in 2016. Now, it doesn't say what he found, but he did get a chance to do it. There's a link here. Let's see. Famed MLB ghost hunter. Sorry, when you think of John Gray, do you think of him as a famed ghost hunter?
I don't. He's not the first thing that comes to mind.
This whole thing of him, he's got like all the equipment and stuff. Hmm. Look at him go. He's having fun.
Man, retirement's treating him well.
Oh, boy.
As soon as I hit 10 years and that full pension, it is straight to ghost hunting for me. I am done with this.
I mean, his lips to my ears, you know what I'm saying? In 2018, let's see. Oh, here we go. Here's another Cardinals story. Carlos Martinez expressed that he had seen some sort of floating ghost on Instagram in June. And teammate Marcell Ozuna believed he had seen something similar. So the two elected to room together. And the headline here from The Cut is Carlos Martinez and Marcell Ozuna become roommates after they saw ghosts in their hotel rooms.
And just so you're aware, like that's like the big thing that you graduate to in Major League Baseball is you no longer ever have to stay in a hotel room with anybody else on the road ever.
So when you choose to, that's not ideal. Okay, so here's the notes here are a little backwards. I don't know where Aaron copied these parts from, but it's on Instagram. They went on Instagram to say they had found ghosts in each of their rooms. And so they decided to room together in one of their rooms. So at least they could fight a ghost together. I would not fuck with either Martinez or Ozuna.
No, no.
Especially Ozuna. He's a big boy. Mm-hmm. The sound crew at Miller Park got in on the fun by playing the Ghostbusters theme song the next game, next day during a meeting on the mound mid-game. Oh, man. Let's see. What else? This one's not ghost. Dodger star Mookie Betts said he doesn't believe in ghosts, but just in case, he elected to stay at an Airbnb in Milwaukee, just in case.
It's a little more fun, in my experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's see. Anything else here? There's so many of these. Let's see. I'll just pick out one or two more. All right. Here's one. Brent Rooker said that something kept changing the channel in his room. Quote, I'll have it on like Golf Channel, and I'll be on my laptop looking down. I look back up, it's on QVC or some other channel that definitely is not Golf Channel.
This sounds like somebody walked into his room and saw that he was on QVC, and he was like, hang on. I was on Golf Channel. Golf. I was on the Golfing Channel.
Wow. What? Wow.
Who would buy these precious moments dolls? What fools would pay these exorbitant prices?
Oh, my God. The ghost got to my laptop, too.
Oh, no. The ghost got to my credit card, and it knows my shipping address.
Quote continues, I happened a few times. I fell asleep with it on one night and woke up at like 4 a.m., and it was off, which I figured was just like a sleep timer. I woke back up at 7:30 or 8, and it was back on, and on a different channel than I'd fallen asleep with it on. It's just kind of small stuff like that.
Hmm.
And we're going to call it there because these go on forever. So that those are some of the many MLB stories of ghost sightings at the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. And if you want to go see ghosts there, you can. Patrick's been there. He survived, so you'll probably be fine too. And you can go see Jen Swanson while you're there. She lives pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Have Jen come by. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jeremy's not too far away too. You could have a whole iTag thing. And I don't even have to go. Yeah. Sounds great. So go check it out, Pfister Hotel. And Milwaukee's a great town. I love Milwaukee. Yeah. It's like a little Chicago.
We give it a lot of shit, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. Sure. But you should go.
But it's the cream city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love cream?
Any thoughts, Patrick, finally, about the Pfister Hotel?
I'm really excited to have a lot more discussions about some old baseball players and how scared they get.
It is nice to think of those big strapping boys all scared. All right. Well, that, I guess, is going to do it for us. So I should remind you all that Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes were taken by my wife, Erin Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Kai Valonis, Jen Jones, and Sam Murdoch. There they are. I didn't write them down this time. I thought I'd remember them finally. No such luck. And all our merch is done by Fox and Quill Studio. They have some really, really fun pieces up. If you haven't checked out the store in a few weeks, boy, do yourself a favor and go nuts, because there's some really great stuff, including a Ghost Curious shirt, because you're ghost curious. I'm going to get that one for you, Pat, because you say you don't believe it. I think you're ghost curious. And I, you know, stay out of the Cream City. And if you do go to the Cream City, don't go to the Pfister. Mm-hmm. It's all right there in the names. Don't do it. Because if you do, there's a real good chance you're going to be on the next episode of Is This a Ghost?